Welcome to the Everyone's a Critic Movie Review Podcast. I'm your co-host, Bob Zarrell. With me, as always, is professional film critic Sean Patrick. And with us sometimes is Zach Covemaker. How you doing, Zach?
Pretty good. How about yourself, man?
That's good. As good as it can be right now, I guess. How about you, Sean?
I'm doing good.
That's good. Visit us at IHateCritics.net, everyonesacriticpodcast.com. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Our handle is CriticsPod. We're also on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Alexa, Ghana, and all your podcatchers, YouTube. Subscribe to the show, rate and review the show. We'll read your reviews on the air if we see them. Patreon. Patreon.com/CriticsPod. Best way to help support the podcast. And then our TeePublic page at IHateCritics.net. Click on the TeePublic link off to the right-hand corner or search Critics Pod when you go to TeePublic.com. We got a lot of shit to get through this week, so let's just start with it. Start right out. A big reason why Zach's coming on is Borat. Subsequent movie film came out this weekend.
Yeah, it did. And I've been wrestling with this movie since I watched it, and I don't like it. Okay, there it is. I said I don't care for Borat. I don't care for his antics, and I don't know necessarily why that is. I think some of what he does is very, very funny, and other aspects of it I find to be desperately uncomfortable and full of cringe. And I've never been a big fan of cringe comedy, and even when it's directed at people I think deserve to be cringed at, it still never feels right to me. And nothing about this really feels right to me. I get what he's going for. I get the jokes, the stuff that he does. I know where he's coming from, and I know the intention is to make people uncomfortable, and people like me, maybe I'm one of those people who needs to be made uncomfortable and forced to think about these things, and that's fine. It doesn't mean I enjoy it. I didn't enjoy this at all. I just don't find anything that Borat does to be, I find it funny. I can't say I don't, but some of it, like the Rudy Giuliani thing, obviously is the biggest talking point. We have to get to it. So I got built up so much to me that I thought it would be even worse than it is. And it's bad. He's definitely a creep. But I think we already knew Rudy Giuliani was a creep. I mean, the guy slept with his cousin, for God's sake. I mean,
who has?
We already know. We already know Rudy Giuliani's a creep. I didn't need hidden camera footage to show that to me. And this hidden camera footage is rather blown up to a degree that, I don't know, it's creepy and wrong, but at the same time, I think people are seeing what they want to see in many ways. And I'm not going to defend Rudy Giuliani. Like I said, he's a goddamn creep. I'm just saying that this is not the smoking gun that liberals all want it to be.
No, what?
And it's frustrating.
To your point, basically liberals are going to watch it and be like, oh my God, what a creep. Conservatives are going to watch and go, he was tucking his shirt in, what's the big deal? And it's frustrating that that's their reaction, because why would you go back to a hotel room with a reporter? But it was in the same suite, so I don't know. I mean, it's hard to, or at least it appeared that way.
He was taking off his mic.
Right. He was definitely
he had a mic pack on. They're taking the mic off. It was in.
In there deep.
And I agree, it's creepy to go into the bedroom with the reporter. And maybe there was more to it. Maybe there wasn't. The fact of the matter is, it's not, like you said, it's not the smoking gun that everybody wants it to be, because it's not going to, nobody who's on his side is going to watch that and change, which is what you, if that's your bigger, if that's what your purpose is, you didn't accomplish it. You just made people that hate him more.
Yeah, and you're preaching to the choir. Yeah, I mean, everybody on our side already hates Rudy Giuliani.
Absolutely.
All right, Zach, go ahead. I know you were trying to say something there.
No, you're good. You're good. The thing is, like, everyone was talking about how he's like trying to hook up with like a 15-year-old, all this stuff. Like, the character's 15, she's like 23.
Right. Like, and she's acting as a reporter. So she's clearly not a 15-year-old reporter in his mind.
Exactly. So it was like,
until Borat burst in the room.
Well, I saw when the articles dropped, I was one of those two. I was like, literally, I'm like, oh shit. How is he going to come up with it? Like, how is he literally going to come out of this, like, grabbing his dick in front of a 15-year-old. Right. And then, like, it's all hype. I agree with you guys. Like, it was creepy. And I'm enjoying reading the behind the scenes interviews and stuff about the making of that scene. Like, it just wasn't as crazy as people built it up. And I was kind of disappointed in that regard. But, you know, like, at this point, we're grasping for straws. I mean, yeah. Rudy Giuliani's going for a 15-year-old. Hunter Biden's selling foreskins for cocaine or whatever the fuck. I don't know what's going on anymore, so let's just roll with it.
We're truly in the worst timeline when this is what we're dealing with.
We're looking for real journalism out of fucking Borat.
Well, and it's never worked either. I mean, Michael Moore tried it, you know, during the Bush-Kerry election with Fahrenheit 9/11, and that didn't work. And I mean, hopefully this was going to happen anyway, Biden beats Trump, but this isn't going to do anything to make it happen, if that was the intent behind it.
Now, let's get into other aspects of this, because we spent a lot of time on the Giuliani thing, which rightly so, and it deserves to be discussed, but the other aspects of this are a lot of it is just a lot of really cringy stuff. He gets up on stage and performs a song, and to the point where it's hard to tell where the performance begins and ends. Like, the people singing along are singing along earnestly, and he's trying to make fools of them, but they agree with every word that he's saying. So where is the parody here? I mean, I know they're made to look foolish because they are, but that's kind of the hateful shit that they enjoy. So it's almost like a both sides thing. It almost plays for me a lot like Team America in a lot of ways, where it's just this both sides are shit, and it just grossed me out.
Oh, he's definitely not doing the both sides thing. Did you watch his?
No, he's more liberal, but oh yeah, that aspect of it, that scene.
I know what you're saying though. And did you see he won some award like last year, and he gave this great speech that kind of went viral last week. It's a year old, about how social media is really a problem. We need to start having checks and balances on the platforms. You know, literally six people decide what the rest of us see and what the news is.
Yeah.
And it was a very good speech. And part of it was, what is funny about his movies, at least for most of the audience, is you know what's happening is wrong. You know that it's racist. And that once you stop believing that... And social media is starting to bring stuff up, like, make the Holocaust deniers more, make the flat earthers, they actually have a platform. You know, the social media has done a lot of that inadvertently, but it takes away from the joke a little bit, which is what he was talking about a year ago before he made this movie, which I think, to your point, on that scene, it wasn't as funny as it probably would have been on the original Borat. On top of that... Were those two guys he was living with, were they actors, or were they...
Right?
That was real. That was, like, apparently, allegedly, those are, like, real people that he stayed in character with for, like, 5 days. Like, he quarantined with them, and that was all apparently, like, 100% legit, and from what I've read.
That's great. Who knows? Couldn't tell.
As awful as those guys were, at the same time, there's a level of kindness to them that they're putting up with this, that they took this guy in out of nothing. I mean, I'm not going to praise these guys. They're shitty people.
Oh, yeah.
But at the same time, how do you decide what he's missing, and what he's missing is any type of nuance whatsoever. He's trying to make them look like fools. They're making themselves look like fools. And there's absolutely no nuance to the fact that they also did this horrendously kind thing for him.
Well, apparently, his whole point in doing that was to shine a light on the people that will literally believe anything that's fed to them on Facebook. And I see your point, Sean, but as a guy who has recently spent a lot of time with people like that, I was so happy. I was so happy to see that on screen, especially because I know some of those people were watching Borat Friday night. So it felt so good. also going with the rally on my end, like, yeah, the scene wasn't as funny as I thought it was going to be. But on my end, like, I remember reading all of that stuff with that rally as it was going down live. Yeah. Like I was on Reddit when they first were like, oh shit, I think Sacha Baron Cohen just hijacked this rally. And so I was watching all of this unfold and I was like laughing my ass off because he literally like secretly paid for this rally. Like he came in as this like this mysterious benefactor, paid for like most of it, and all they had was like this dude's Facebook, and they're like, oh, whatever, he's giving us money. Let's let him do whatever the fuck he wants. And he paid for the security, and by the time like they finally figured out that was Sacha Baron Cohen up there, and I think that's why the camera panned off to like go film the stuff with his daughter.
Yeah.
They were like, oh shit, we gotta shut this down. His security were literally like blocking the generators and the stage so he could finish the song because the crowd was loving it so much. But the organizers were freaking out because they didn't want to be. Everyone thought he was filming for a show. Who is America?
Right.
No one knew he was doing Borat. And so all this what was
ahead.
That?
Go ahead, finish. I'll.
Oh, I was gonna say like all this stuff starts going down, and then like they finally shut him down. They get him out of there. They kick him out. This local news affiliate goes in there and is like interviewing the people that were running it. And you see Sacha Baron Cohen sneak in the background in another disguise, going back in there to go film reaction shots. Like all of that stuff, like watching the sausage get made all of that stuff way, way more enjoyable for me. And like, we knew like he was filming something. We just, like I said, everyone just assumed he was doing Who is America again because that show got him the award. Right. That show was incredible. And we didn't realize that this was going on. I never thought in a million years there'd be another fucking Borat because I've seen the first one. I've been on Twitter. I didn't think that there was actually going to be a legitimate space for another Borat movie ever again. Like, after seeing the Brothers Grimsby, I didn't think Sacha Baron Cohen was going to be allowed to make another fucking movie. Done.
Yeah.
Yeah, but then, go ahead, Bob. Well, my point was going to be is you're right. It's the how the sausage is made that makes it as good as it is, I think. I didn't read up on it. So I did, a lot of that is left out for me. But, you know, Kevin Smith's one of my favorite directors. Part of why I love him so much is because of the beyond the movie stuff that he does. And I guarantee that that's part of what's so appealing to Borat and why I like the first one so much more than this one. I didn't hate this one. It was fine. I thought they did a great job of explaining why he couldn't be dressed like Borat.
Yeah, that was so clever and necessary. Yeah, I liked that.
And
Just to wrap up the whole rally thing, though, I think part of the hype around that really kind of ruined the scene for me because it made it seem like it was a lot more dangerous, like he was putting himself in a very dangerous situation. Then you watch it's completely controlled. Everybody's buying in, and there's no danger whatsoever. And that took away from the scene for me.
Yeah, like I just. How happy everyone was when like the whole thing was just like it was unsettling a little bit. Like
deeply unsettling.
I'm tired of seeing that like on a daily basis. And I do. And I'm tired of it. And I don't know. For me it was just like finally feeling a little satisfaction. Finally like knowing that there's some someone's out there doing what I want to. Like someone's out there like living my inner child's dreams. Like,
see, I work in talk radio, so I see this sometimes. I see some of these attitudes sometimes, and so it's not. I'm not surprised by the reaction that he gets here, and I know that. And maybe some people will be surprised by the reaction that he gets there, and maybe they need that. I don't know.
It won't, but I hope.
The one scene that I did enjoy that I thought really actually did live up to the whole thing was the Mike Pence scene. Him breaking into CPAC was the highlight of the entire movie for me. That one cracked me up.
And I mean, that's what it is. It's a series of sketches that he tries to weave into a movie, and he did a good enough job making it make a story. But basically, you got to find the sketches that work. And that was a situation where he kind of put himself in danger. And You're right. I agree completely. It definitely was cringe comedy at its most effective for me. I agree. That was definitely the highlight of the movie. I don't know if call it a highlight, but the whole when they're doing the dance when she was on her period, that was really cringy.
Nope.
Can I ask you a question?
I almost turned the movie off right there. I almost turned it off right there and walked away.
Can I ask you a question? Because I did, before we get into, I mean, this kind of goes back to your review of Borat, which we haven't even got to yet. But maybe I'll save it. I'll wait till we get to Borat. But I want to ask the question at some point. But is there anything else on Borat 2 you guys want to cover?
I'm not a fan. I don't quite know what this is. You know, trying to work in this point, I guess. You know, Sacha Baron Cohen did give that speech about, you know, so many people control the media and control what you get to see. Well, what's he done in the past 3 months but work for Jeff Bezos, Time Warner, and Netflix? So he wants to complain about this but take their money at the same time.
Fairness, he didn't name those guys. Maybe he named Bezos, but he didn't name
right, Netflix. But when you refer to the six people that control everything that you watch, Jeff Bezos, Time Warner, Netflix. You know, well, the other ones went... You know who you're referring to when you talk about that, and you're referring to Jeff Bezos. He's the number one guy. He controls everything.
Mark Zuckerberg's number one guy.
I would say Bezos is bigger than Zuckerberg.
But I think he might be bigger, but Zuckerberg controls more. Facebook is what's ruining the... I understand Bezos is richer, probably, but Zuckerberg, Facebook controls everything. I mean,
when you talk about the six, though, you're throwing those two into it, and he's complaining about that and taking their money.
Well, I understand, but he did name the six, and I don't think Time Warner or Netflix were part of the six he named. I'm just trying to make that point, that's all. But you're right, it's definitely hypocritical, even if it's nine instead of six. Whatever it ends up being, he's definitely taking money to do something. And it wasn't as effective, but it was funny, so I did enjoy it. Zach, are you going to say something?
It's not important, but I do want to say I really enjoyed, I don't have her name right now, but I really enjoyed the actress that played his daughter. I felt like she, for the most part, held her own, especially with like the crazy shit, like with the moon time dance and all that stuff. Like, she definitely, like, I was impressed.
Maria Bakalova.
I thought she did a fantastic job. Like, I'm all in for the cringe humor and like the hidden camera hijink bullshit. So I just want to say, like, she literally, like, she kicked ass.
There's a lot of funny parts of this. I don't hate it, but I'm not a fan.
I'm not going to say this is my favorite out of the movies he's done, but it exceeded all my expectations, with the exception of, like, you know, obviously Rudy Giuliani.
Yeah. I will say I was slightly disappointed in that. I liked Borat way better, but it was funny enough for me to enjoy. All right, let's move on to Borat.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the main event for the linear, legitimate, and universally recognized, undisputed classic.
I'm hitting that button twice this week, guys. Borat.
Borat, yeah. This is 2006 and Sacha Baron Cohen's big breakthrough film. I found it to be still tremendously overrated. And a lot of that is me reviewing the people who love this movie, because there's a lot of people who love this movie, and I think they love aspects of this movie, and I don't think they're looking at this as a movie, because as a whole, there's a lot of meandering, there's a lot of searching for the joke before you find it, there's a lot of heavy cringe humor, and a lot of it is very derivative of Tom Green, Jackass, and similar media. And to me, I find that the fact that we don't acknowledge the fact that a lot of the stuff that Borat does, like, you know, when he goes and poops outside of Trump Tower, which retroactively gets funnier, but still, at the time, pooping outdoors, I mean, Johnny Knoxville was doing that on TV in a Home Depot. I mean, We've seen this before. You know, assaulting people on the street. We'd seen Tom Green do that on MTV. I mean, this is none of this. And even Sacha Baron Cohen himself had done it better on HBO as Ali G. Did a lot of this, like the interview stuff he does in the movie. He did that better as Ali G.
Yeah, I guess where I disagree, I mean, I agree with you, but I want to take it to another level, is that he did it. Doing it as a movie is a lot harder than doing as a one-off segment on a TV show, so I don't necessarily agree that he did it better on the TV show, but maybe I agree that it played better, but I think it's more impressive trying to put it into a movie. You're right, but at the same time, Candid Camera did it before Jackass did, so it's not... He did a lot of it in character, which Tom Green did, but he put himself in way more dangerous situations. So I think it lives up to the hype it deserves. But I also know that anytime you put hype on something, it definitely affects the way I feel about it. Probably anybody, depending, unless you're bought into the hype, it's going to affect the way you feel about a movie. But I am impressed that he was able to stay in character and get into some of the situations he got into when Johnny Knoxville just plays Johnny Knoxville all the time. But you're right. It is the same type of humor. I think this is better than that. Sorry.
Zach, this is a franchise that is a spanned your much of your, knowing lifetime. Tell us about your reaction to Borat.
So, fun little fact. I was 13 when Borat came out.
My daughter's
13. That alone should fucking like tell you how I feel about this movie. I love this shit. This is a movie I was kind of like a little afraid to go back to, because like I loved it. I understand. I was one of those fucking annoying people. I was one of those guys. I was one of those guys that just ran around quoting Borat and Anchorman all the time. I get it.
I gotta say the endless Borat quotes. Yeah, that did also affect my opinion.
My love for Borat's afraid. Like I'm a little afraid to get married. I will constantly be doing my wife like literally all the goddamn time, and I know it's going to happen. I have no restraint. This movie, it kicked off my love. I obviously was watching a lot of like Jackass, and I did watch Tom Green. I wasn't too into that, but Jackass was like a huge thing, and it kind of kicked off my love for people just going around and like putting a spotlight on like the normal, average, everyday like schmuck and just doing stupid shit. I love that so much. Like I love it. I love Bruno. I love like all that, like all pretty much like all that stuff where he's like going out there and being like a little facetious and just like just fucking with people. I'm into it. I'm losing my train of thought a little bit right now, but the weird racist shit in the first one, because there's a lot of it. And unfortunately, like, I know it's spun off, and a lot of people growing up, like, were like, oh, Borat said it, so I can say it.
Right.
That
alone, I'm not really into, like, I know I was probably guilty of a lot of it, too. But it going back on rewatching it, knowing that he's not out there, like, actually believing in this racist shit, and he's not actually, like, out there, like... trying to genuinely be a bad person, but he's trying to like shine a light on people being bad, I guess. It kind of changes it for me. And like there is some stuff like when he walked up to the group of black guys on the street, that's, you know, I wasn't really into. Like 2020 Zach was a little like, but there's too many people out there that think that's okay. So I think like him going out there and showing like, hey, this guy is a fucking idiot, don't be this fucking guy. I don't know.
Yeah, I guess I grew up, I liked Tom Green for a while. He's only around for a while, I guess. I hated Jackass, except for whenever I saw it, I laughed. It was one of those things where it wasn't fair. I love Impractical Jokers now. But at the time, I wasn't as – I didn't watch this type of humor a lot. So it really caught me off guard when I saw it. And I ended up laughing way harder than I've probably ever laughed before up until that point. And then it got even better when I brought my father-in-law down from upstate New York, who's very much like the people he goes and lives with in Borat 2 for a while, and showed him Borat and how uncomfortable he got watching it. But at the same time, there's parts like when he gets with those college kids on that bus at the end or whatever, and – or the train, whatever they were in. I didn't watch it again. Sorry. The RV. And they're being all misogynist and stuff. I mean, I could see, I never believed any of that, but I could see being drunk and pretending to be, if, you know, you got the mob mentality going where all my friends are talking like that and this guy comes. I mean, I could see, I kind of found that a little unfair. Cause, I mean, I would, it bugs me that I would even make that joke, especially back then. I mean, now I wouldn't, but I could have seen myself as a college kid being a stupid idiot and going along with my friends. I would never believe it, never did once in my life, but I could still see being drunk and falling for it. And part of that bugs me because it can, I mean, that's going to follow those kids around forever for the people who know who they are, and they're never going to be able to let it go. And that always made me feel a little uncomfortable. But overall, I just found it impressive because he did do some pretty crazy things.
He did, and some of it is funny. It's undeniably funny. But, like, the whole Pamela Anderson thing is completely unfunny, and they spend a lot of time on that, searching for whatever that joke is supposed to be. Is the joke that it's that she's somebody at the time in 2006 who was kind of passé in terms of being somebody that people were crushing on still? Was the joke that she was not in on the joke, or was she in on the joke? I mean, it meanders forever trying to find a point to that being a joke. And so much of that is forgotten about Borat. So many people forget how long he takes and how many miles of footage he must have had where he was just searching for what the joke was going to be.
Well, I don't think having all that footage is a problem. I mean, that type of humor is going to, especially trying to do a feature-length movie, you're going to get that, especially when you're trying to, not only you're searching for the joke, you're searching for the story, you know? Mm-hmm. And I believe the point of the joke was, and it dies as soon as you find out the truth, was she in on it or not? Because when he walks up and throws her in the bag, really funny if she's not into it. Really creepy now, but at the time it was just like, holy shit. Then you find out she's in on it, like, oh, but you find that out later on. So, mm-hmm. You know, you got that one payoff. It doesn't work on repeat viewings. And so then on the second and third time, the Pamela Anderson stuff is kind of boring. So it's really a one-off. You know, it works the very first time and then it doesn't work again. And I think that's a really good observation that I didn't really think about, but you're right. That's a big part of the movie, and it worked the first time. It hasn't worked since.
It didn't work on me the first time, but I think I already knew.
But you know what I'm talking about. If it's going to work, it's going to work the first time only.
Yeah, I do. Zach, sorry.
Oh, no, you're good. It's always kind of felt to me like the ending of like a Jackass movie, it usually like the ending's funny the first time, and then like after that you kind of just pull out the DVD. Like I always kind of that's pretty much where I got. Like, every time I'd rewatch Borat, like growing up and shit, it pretty much get to the Pamela Anderson part and I'd be like, all right, cool, the movie's over. Like there's a couple jokes later, but for the most part you can just kind of quit there. Yeah, it's kind of like I said, like the ending of Jackass. You get to like whatever show toony thing they're going to do, and you're like, okay. And maybe, eject disc.
I'm with you completely, but maybe it's just because I'm an old man and I like dad humor all of a sudden, but I could watch Impractical Jokers over and over again for us. That's literally all I have cable for.
Oh, dude.
I don't know.
Right around the same time, we got our stimulus check. Voodoo had a sale for all the seasons of that. I own all of that show. And then they announced it was going to HBO Max. And I was like, fuck, I could have spent $15. But whatever.
I love showing it to people. It just never – and I don't know. But, I mean, I like Borat. My question with you, Sean, was going to be – and I think you've kind of already answered it and we've kind of already discussed it – but was the fact that it was so overrated, or I don't know if that's the right word, but – is so put on this platform, you know, similar to Mad Max Fury Road, movies you've also liked but didn't like to the extent of other people, and sometimes that affects Does that play a role in this? Which I think you already answered, but the way people view
it? Absolutely. Absolutely. There's no doubt about it. I think people create a hype around this and even this new one as well, Borat 2. I think people are creating hype around this so much that it creates a level of expectation that even if I did like the movies, they couldn't reach the level of expectation that people create around it. Like the Rudy Giuliani thing is a great example of that. People built it up so much for 2 days that when you watch it, you go, oh, yeah, okay, I get what you mean.
Right.
Well, it's not getting the laugh, it's not getting the shock, it's getting the, he's a creep. Yeah, okay.
And it would have been better if it was just...
See,
go ahead, Zach.
Oh, I was going to say, seeing that blurry like mirror picture that was floating around the internet was way more exciting than the actual scene.
Absolutely.
And if I didn't know it was in there, at least then I'd have been shocked that they got it, you know, the interview and did what they did, you know, got past Secret Service and all that. But instead, you knew it was in there and it just kind of was what it was.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else on Borat before you move on?
Like I said, I think Borat's overrated. I see what Sacha Baron Cohen is going for, and I appreciate some of what he's going for. I think there's a level of irresponsibility in some of it that is a little much. Like, you know, when parody goes so far around that it becomes something that the other side can go, yeah, he's on our side. It becomes dangerous, and it becomes something like you do need to take responsibility for. And I don't know that necessarily he does.
Yeah, no, I understand that point of view completely. You anything else, Zach, or do you want to move on?
I'm all good. I mean, I've said all I can. I love both Borat movies. I obviously like the first one a hell of a lot more. This is my shit. You know,
yeah.
I'm into it.
It's weird because I agree with Sean on a lot of what he says, but for whatever reason, I like Sacha Baron Cohen a lot because of this, but I dislike a lot of the stuff he's done other than this.
Yeah.
He's done a lot of horrible shit.
But I thought he was great last week.
I liked The Dictator, but then I revisited The Dictator and realized I didn't like The Dictator.
I guess
Dictator, I don't like Bruno. I know you do. I don't like Bruno. And then obviously Brothers Grimsby, I think everybody can universally hate.
Yeah.
Yeah, too much elephant cum.
Yeah.
I'm good.
Yeah, I'm with you guys. I don't know. It's just weird. But I like his commitment.
If I could go back to something awful for just a moment about Borat 2, just to talk about the notion of the period scene once more, because I know that humor can be done well. Night of the Virgin is a movie that I was just talking about again today because I love this movie. They do that, and they do that so much better. Like, it's actually genuinely hilariously funny. And I think there's a way to do it, and I just didn't think that was it.
Yeah, I mean, I think just the fact that the people weren't aware was all that really worked for it. But all right, let's move on. Friendsgiving
is a new comedy starring Malin Ackerman and Kat Dennings. It's about a movie star who's throwing a Thanksgiving party for her friend, Kat Dennings, who's depressed because her first openly gay relationship has ended and she doesn't know who she is anymore. And she's very depressed about that. She's finally, though, accepting that she's coming out as gay. So this is also a very hard time for her. So she'd kind of like to just be with her friend. Her friend just had a baby, and so the two of them and the baby are going to spend Thanksgiving together, except that Malin Ackerman, the movie star character, she's invited her new boyfriend, and then she's invited several other friends, and now suddenly there's an entire party going on, and it becomes a very source of great tension between these two best friends, but this has gone from one thing to another thing, and then there's a whole lot of, you know, nonsense that comes into it from there. This is a very good movie. It's funny. It's got a nice nasty wit to it. Alicia Tyler is in this movie. Alicia Tyler's in this movie, and she's very funny. And she plays a mom and a wife who comes over and gets totally high and drunk and is just having a great time. And the stuff that she gets into gets very funny at times. And I really love the casting. So you're playing a character who's got a lot of stuff going on. She's dealing with a heartbreak. She's dealing with coming out and being fully gay for the first time in her life, and the things that she's going to go through during this day get very funny. She gets very aggravated, and she plays angry really well. And I really enjoyed this movie. This is really fun.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. I thought it was a fun movie. You know, the idiot in me was going, well, Kat Dennings is 32 and Malin Ackerman is 40 and Aisha Tyler is 50. But at the same time,
how are these people friends?
But they, you, when you watch it, you buy it. I mean,
yeah.
Kat Dennings can definitely play between 25 and 40, probably pretty easy. And Malin Ackerman can kind of do the same. And Aisha Tyler can do that. I mean, they definitely all, they pulled it off and it was believable. It was just me knowing how long they've all been around. I was doing the math. But that was me bringing it to it. Nowhere in the movie do you feel that way. And I don't know. It was just kind of a fun movie. I was kind of shocked that I was waiting for it to go off the rails and be a piece of shit, but it really wasn't, ever.
Just throw out a quick plug. I interviewed Aisha Tyler this week, and I'll throw that on our Facebook page for people who want to hear it.
Awesome.
Yes, yeah, she's cool.
Interviewed her years ago. very cool. Anything else on Friendsgiving?
I recommend it. That's pretty much, you know, you don't have many Thanksgiving movies, so this add this one to your, I think, three movie rotation that there are Thanksgiving movies.
Oh, absolutely. It's one of the better, I like it better than some of the classic ones. But definitely check it out this, you know, in the coming weeks. I think you're going to enjoy it quite a bit. I think you can rent it on all your, you know, Amazon, Apple, all that good stuff. Synchronic.
It's on my list to check out. I want to check it out. I didn't get around to it. I didn't have the time.
You'll enjoy it. Synchronic.
Synchronic stars Anthony Mackie and Jamie Dornan as EMS workers in New Orleans who are dealing with a series of drug-related deaths that they're essentially having to treat to come to. They're victims who are suffering these bizarre drug-related deaths due to this new drug called Synchronic, which is not a street drug. It's an over-the-counter drug that is similar to kind of synthetic drugs that you can buy in gas stations and so on. The idea here is that you take Synchronic and you think you're getting high or having a trip, but you're actually going back in time for 7 minutes. And while you're back in time, you can die. You can be attacked and killed by whatever is there. And if you leave the spot that you're in during that time, you can get lost in time and be stuck there forever. Which is, they do a really good job of establishing some really cool rules for their you know, sci-fi premise here, that this whole 7 minutes thing. And I love the way Anthony Mackie plays this. He explores this in various different parts of his his house. When he takes a Synchronic, he goes back to different times. So, like, he goes back to conquistador time. He goes back to the Civil War. He goes back to just a time when the Earth was just snow. And he's putting together all these rules. Each time he goes back, he comes up with a different rule that he has to follow in order to survive. And the plot kicks in when Jamie Dornan's teenage daughter takes in Chronic and gets lost, and Anthony Mackie decides that he's got to go back in time and get her. And the drug's been discontinued, so he's only got a series. It's a very simple, you know, very simple premise, rather predictable in ways. But Anthony Mackie is such a great actor and so compelling that I didn't care about the aspects that don't work. Like, this is a very muddy, ugly cinematography here. And Jamie Dornan's got this character that's really irritating. His main character trait is whining about how great his marriage is. He's upset that he's got such a good relationship with his wife, and they have a new baby, and they got a teenage daughter, and all their relationships are good. And he's annoyed that he can't cheat. Like, what kind of character trait is this to play? It gets old really fast, and you don't really care for his character because of that. No, but overall, I like to recommend it because I like Anthony Mackie.
That's cool. Kind of when you started talking about it, I was like, is this that Jamie Foxx movie from earlier in the year?
I had the same thought. Yeah,
but it looks like it keeps going.
That one was about superpowers, though, not time travel.
It seems to be the only difference. But that's also where the story I mean, that's where the story picks up, really. You just have the premise and the story goes with that. Sounds like something Josh might like.
Yeah.
The Radium Girls.
The Radium Girls, yes. Starring Joey King as one of three sisters who work for a company called American Radium. This is based off of a true story. If you've ever listened to the Dollop episode on the Radium Girls, you know how horrific this story is going to be. This movie does pull some punches in that aspect, but it's still a really valuable piece of history and a necessary one, because we basically, the idea here is that these three sisters, one of them has died 3 years before the story has occurred. So 3 years ago, she died. They attributed her death to syphilis, but she had died from radium poisoning. And they learn this when her second sister gets sick and starts to have all these same symptoms. And though she is a virgin, somehow the doctor that works for the company tries to say that she has syphilis. So they know that the company is lying and making up shit. So they go to an actual doctor. They go to the New Jersey Consumer Group, who begins to investigate this. They pull their sister out of the ground. They have her body pulled out. And when they find the body, when they pull the body out of the grave, it's still glowing. And that makes me so emotional for some reason. I don't know. I get really emotional thinking about this when I think about this story and the horrific things that they did. For several years, they're telling these girls to paint these watch dials with radium so that the watch dials will glow. And the best way to get the numbers to glow properly is to use a fine brush. To get the brush to be as fine as they needed to, they had girls lick it.
Jeez.
Lick a brush covered in radium. Ugh. That they knew was killing them. That they knew. They knew it was killing them. And they did it anyway.
Fuck
Makes
that.
Me damn emotional. Makes me damn emotional just thinking about it. And it just goes to show that when you take the reins off, when you pull the goalie and you don't have anybody, you pull away the referee and you don't have anybody watching, what people will do to protect profit and to protect, you know, their millions of dollars, this notion that we can just trust corporations to do the right thing because of what the market demands is just this silly, silly, childish notion that millions of people still hold to. And I don't understand it. I never will. And we need movies like this, even as this movie is pulling punches and it's overall not great in terms of its technical stuff. We need to tell the story again and again. Anytime that somebody talks about trusting corporations to do the right things, we need to go American Radium. We need to say that as loudly as possible. American Radium and what they did, murdering people for profit. Killing poor women for profit. That's what they did. We let them get away with it. They used radium in watch dials till 1978. It's disgusting. It makes me sick.
Yeah, and it's right back to that, you know, the six people who control everything right now. They're doing the same exact thing.
Only Jeff Bezos, Amazon warehouses. Look it up.
Well, hey,
we want America to be ran like a business.
Oh fuck!
We want a big business. We want a big businessman taking control. That's what we want. Yeah.
Mm. Well, and the way social media controls everything is so—it's just, I don't know. It's the stuff that comes back up because that's not. There's no need to fact check anything. There's no one holding them accountable. All because, and they put little fake things in place to make it look like they're trying, but they're still protecting their profit. If they really wanted to do it right, it'd cost a little money.
Yeah, and absolutely.
They're not willing to spend it. Even Twitter, we put this new thing on there where you have to actually read the article before you can share it. That doesn't do anything. I mean, it's neat and good for you for trying, but you can do more. And I'll say Twitter does more than most, but Twitter also controls the news. So it's the whole thing is. And this movie, the way you're describing it, makes me feel a lot about like what's going on there. Were you gonna say something, Zach?
It's a story that needs to be told, like I said. Yeah. And if this isn't the best possible way to tell it, but they tell it well enough, and that they tell it at all is enough in some ways for me to just say, see this movie, just so you know what happened. These women had to have their jaws removed. Literally, their jaws fell off.
If you run
a Geiger counter over the grave of a radio girl, it still ticks to this day.
Are you going to say something, Zach?
Fuck that. Oh, no, I was just saying, I kind of need to see this movie. This sounds terrible, but, like, as someone who's lived his life being the little guy being, like, bent over by corporations, like, I'm agreeing with what Sean's saying, like, more people need to be, like, into this. More people need to be paying attention, because I'll watch it now. I hadn't even heard about this movie before, but
do check out the episode out, sure, of the Dollop podcast on this, because they go a lot more hardcore than this movie does.
I'll have to check that out. You turned me on to that podcast a couple years back, so I'll
don't let Bob turn you off to it. He doesn't like it anymore.
Yeah. A little misogyny in there. Maybe not on the podcast, but Dave Anthony's kind of a
but like the Rocket Belt, man.
It was entertaining for a while for me, but then you start seeing things he says.
I did end up reading, by the way, like a while back, I did read the book that they used for reference for that podcast. Oh my God, it's so good. It's so goddamn good.
It's a Coen Brothers movie, isn't it? It needs to be a Coen Brothers movie.
It is. It's so good.
But yeah, Radium Girls, I just want everybody to see this, and I just want you to be angry. Please get angry about this. We're not angry about this enough. We're so distracted by things like Borat that we don't spend time on things that need to be upset, where we need to be pointing a finger. Not to say that Borat's bad for that, and I'm not blaming Borat. It's just an example of what we're obsessed with right now. Right. We should be obsessed with things like this that deserve to be seen and need our eyes and our awareness and our anger.
Definitely. All right. On the Rocks.
On the Rocks. Man, I love this movie. Bill Murray, Rashida Jones, directed by Sofia Coppola, who is she speaks to me in a way that so many filmmakers don't. I feel like I understand what she's doing in a way, and I know that's ridiculous, but I just feel it somehow. And what she's doing with this story is telling a story about a woman named Laura, played by Rashida Jones, who is at a crisis in her life where she's struggling as a writer. She's struggling as a parent. She's mostly alone because her husband, played by Marlon Wayans, is starting a new company, and he's spending a lot of time doing that. He's away a lot. And she's starting to think that maybe he might be cheating on her. And a lot of that is projection based off of her life growing up with a father, Bill Murray, Felix, who cheated on her mother a lot and cheated on every woman, does not believe in monogamy, and is not shy about it. And yet at the same time, he was a great dad. He was always there when she needed him. He was always doting. He was always kind and not a bad guy to her, and really not a bad guy to anybody. Just a guy who really likes sleeping with a lot of different women. And Sofia Coppola is so great at presenting this character and allowing Bill Murray to reveal this character. And as this guy who's like endlessly charming, just complete bullshit artist, but completely charming while doing it. And it's just wonderful, the dynamic that they build here, where you can sense like the resentment and the awareness that Rashida Jones has of what her dad has done and what his life has wrought upon her, is making her suspicious of this really good husband that she actually does have. And this little comedy bit about them, like an almost sitcom level comedy bit of them going out and following him around and Felix doing background checks on him and playing detective and hanging out together and just drinking martinis and talking. And I just adore this movie. This is one of my favorite things of the year, right there with Ages for Happiness and She Dies Tomorrow. I just think this is a masterpiece, and it's not going to be for everybody. Not everybody is seeing what I'm seeing in this, and I get that. But that's happened to me a lot when it comes to Sofia Coppola. I love the movie Somewhere with Stephen Dorff. I think that movie's amazing. Most people can't get past for 15 minutes, and I love it.
Oh, wow. I thought this was great. I mean, this is right up there with Lost in Translation for me. It's really, really good. I disagree with you that he was a good father, but he did love her and she loved him. You know, yeah. I mean, what he's doing is horrible, but all he wants to do is spend time with her. And there's such a charm there. It was so insanely watchable. It's one of those movies where, similar to Lost in Translation, like, the Bill Murray fans are going to be like, what the fuck is this? And that's another thing I love about this, kind of the opposite of the Borat effect, where it's people hate it because they don't understand it. And I don't know. I thought this was insanely watchable. I thought it was fun. I thought it was smart. Everybody in it was great. It made me just sit there and be watching Rashida Jones going, why isn't she a star? You know,
she's so good.
She's got such a wide variety of what she could do. She's funny. She can play just your ordinary person. I guarantee you she could play a superhero or some sort of action star if you let her. She has this, looks like she could have the range to do a lot of different things, and she's just kind of stuck with the, and I mean, this is the best role she's had in probably ever. But she was so good in this. She's been good in a lot of things I've seen her, and I'm just like, God, she should be, you know, all over the place, like Charlize Theron or someone like that. I really think she could pull it off. And Bill Murray is amazing as always, and Marlon Wayans does a great job of, it's not for, I mean, he's leaving you in the dark because you really don't know what to believe.
Right.
But it's not because, you know, it's not cheating. I mean, he's really, truly busy at work. And it's, I don't know, the way he played it, I think is good. I could see people not liking it for him, but I think it worked for what he was doing.
Right.
For what the character was. And I think it was great. I think everybody should go see it.
Yeah, I think...
Is it worth doing the free trial? Like, is this worth the Apple TV free trial? Like, I mean, I've been kind of waiting.
Get an iPhone.
Absolutely, yeah.
Get an iPhone. They'll just give you a year for free. Really? I said I was never going to get Apple Plus, and then I got my wife upgraded her iPhone, and all of a sudden we had it for a year. And I was like, all right, I guess I got it.
Well, I'm up for an upgrade, so maybe. Because I've been waiting for that thing to like, get me to make the jump, because I have too many fucking subscriptions. But between like this and like Greyhound, like, I think I might actually finally pull the trigger on that fucking
free trial. There's a Boy State, which is an amazing documentary.
Then you've got
Bruce Springsteen's new documentary, Letter to You, which is amazing, and the Beastie Boys documentary.
Is the Midsummer director's cut on there? Like, did that happen?
I know there is a director's cut. I didn't know if that had anything to do with Apple.
I don't know if it's on there.
I remember originally it was supposed to be, and then I don't know if they pulled that or not, because they were selling it on like the A24 website for like a week, but I didn't get it. I just want to see it. I want to see that so fucking bad.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, do you like Lost in Translation? Is that like one of the, do you like
Hold It Really High?
I mean, if you like that, I mean, I don't want to also overblow this one to the point where you're like, well, this isn't Lost in Translation.
I'm pretty much everything about this movie is like gotten my attention, because I love Bill Murray. I love Bill Murray when he does like those movies you don't fucking expect him to do. Like, you don't expect him to be like Rashida Jones's dad, but like, it makes sense. Like, you're just like, all right, I'm in. Like, but I do think, for like what you were saying earlier with like Rashida Jones not being like a huge star, she was on Conan O'Brien's podcast. I think it was earlier this week, and it sounds like she kind of just likes to like dip her toes everywhere. Like, yeah. I know she's making a documentary about like her dad, like Quincy Jones. Right. That's apparently like the way that like some of the stuff that they included, it sounds incredible. Like, it sounds like she just kind of likes to like do a little bit of everything. So I agree, man, I would love to see her like in like a Marvel movie or something. Like, I would like to see her like branch out, because I mean, I'm a huge Parks and Rec guy. Like, I love me some Ann Perkins, man. Like, yeah. I'm all for it.
And I'm saying that more for, like, part of me is like, I just want her to be more successful. But at the same time, you know, maybe she doesn't want to be, you know, Scarlett Johansson's pretty much had to do Marvel movies for the last 10 years. You know, Robert Downey Jr. That's all they're affiliated with right now. You know, they do a couple things here on the side, but some of it sucks. And then most of their time has to be spent towards those. So I guess I get it. Maybe I'm just wanting something for
I want it to, man. Ever since I Love You, Man, and like her brief stint on The Office, like I love her. I'm all for it. Like,
yeah.
Do you guys watch Angie Tribeca at all? Like the weird
I've
show.
I've seen a few episodes of that. Yeah.
Oh God, she's so good at comedy. Like, yeah. I'm all in the Rashida Jones camp. I want more.
And Bill Murray.
This is where if there is going to be an Academy Awards next year, this is where it needs to go. It needs to go to this movie. It needs to go to Bill Murray and Rashida Jones right off the top.
Yeah.
I'll go all top categories with this one. This is right up there for me.
Oh, I agree. But that scene with the cops alone.
That is such a great scene. That is amazing.
Maybe. And this is going to be a bold statement. Might be the best scene Bill Murray's ever filmed.
Up there.
Really?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. That is so incredible. It is so incredible to watch. Yeah.
And he's
so
like,
much charm. Boys. Never seen a more charming human.
The whole movie, he's like fucking that. And he's a piece of shit. I mean, he's not, but he is. He's Bill Murray in this more than any other movie. You know, a lot of the times when you think he's Bill Murray, like Scrooged or Groundhog Day, and then he ends up hating those movies. This is probably the one that captures it. Probably would make him the most happy. And
I could imagine this character, you know, being the kind of guy who would whisper in somebody's ear and no one will ever believe you.
Right. Exactly. I love this movie. It was a lot of fun, and I highly recommend it. All right, let's move on because we're hitting an hour already. Rebecca, Netflix.
Rebecca. Man, I hate this movie. Rebecca is a remake of the 1940 Alfred Hitchcock adaptation of Daphne du Maurier's novel of the same name. It stars Armie Hammer and Lily James. The idea here is that Armie Hammer has just lost a wife to a mysterious death he's recovering in Saint-Tropez, and he meets this girl who's working as a companion to this older woman, and he falls in love with her. He takes her home and marries her, and she becomes the second Mrs. De Winter, which is the only thing we ever know her as throughout the entire movie, is as the second Mrs. De Winter. The staff is led by a woman who played by Kristen Scott Thomas, Mrs. Danvers, who is very much still in fealty to Rebecca, the first Mrs. De Winter.
Can I pause you real quick, Sean? Can I pause you real quick? We're an hour into the movie now. It took an hour to get to where Sean's at right now.
Yeah, I'm good. I'm out.
Anyway, continue.
I'm glad I didn't watch it.
Such a great point, Bob.
Continue.
I hate this movie as much as for what it is, because it is very bad in terms of its pacing, in terms of its character and getting to where it is. But it's mostly bad because the first movie, the original Rebecca, which is another classic we're doing this week, is so brilliant. And what Ben Wheatley, the director here, does is just get rid of everything that's great about the original. Just jacks it. Just jacks it right out the door for no good reason other than, I guess, we have to make this to something different. But that's great. You want to make it something different. You want to make it something your own. Make it in a way that is somehow different and as good, instead of just getting rid of everything that was good about the original.
Like logic. Like Hitchcock. Like logic.
The original, I guess. Huh?
They got rid of logic in this movie. I mean, that's literally what they took out of some of the things that happened in it were like, one, I just assumed that some of the illogical parts, because that's what they did in 1940, and they didn't know what they were doing. And then I watched the 1941, and I was like, oh my God, why would they add this? Why would they take this out? It doesn't make any sense to me.
Oh, so much so. Yes, there is so much about this. I had to write an entire 9-page like spoiler article talking about all the stupid decisions that they made in this movie. So many amazing scenes in that original film. So many detours that this movie takes away from what was so great. Like, one of the big plot points in this, in the original, is Mr. De Winter, played by Sir Laurence Olivier, has an aversion to water, and he stays away from the water very specifically because his wife died in a boating accident. So he stays away from the water, and you have an assumption there that this is too brief. What this really does is immediately put him on the water. Mm-hmm. Immediately take him down to the beach for a thing. Then they go swimming. And it's like, you just totally removed one of the most important aspects of this character. Because eventually, the twist is that he's going to say how much he hates his wife. And he wasn't avoiding water because he loved his wife and he was in grief. He was avoiding water because it reminded him of what he did.
Right.
Sorry.
Well, and then, yeah, it's hard to talk about this one without the classic at the same time.
It's true.
But what it, like the classic, you kind of know there's a mystery from the get-go. You don't really, I did the opposite of what Sean said to do. I watched the Netflix movie first. And when I watched it, the logical stuff bugged me, but I was like, okay, this is watchable. I get why people would like it. And it wasn't until I went back to the classic and I was like, oh my God! There was no gun. Why? I mean, he freaking shoots her in the remake. She hits her head in the original, and he gets off because she had cancer. I mean,
the original is the way it is because they were forced to be that way by the Hays Code. They couldn't actually have him murder his wife and get away with it, and that's what Hitchcock wanted to do: was have him murder his wife and get away with it. That's what he wanted to do, and they wouldn't let him do that. So he had to come up with this convoluted thing, and that he still makes this convoluted aspect work. He still makes that work. That's the genius of Hitchcock. He still makes that resonate and makes sense. And the whole point is to point out that rich people can do whatever they want. Rich people can get away with anything. They can get away with covering up your wife's murder. You can get away with anything just because you're rich. And the entire system of our government is built on protecting them. We see in the original, in the coroner character, who is basically from the very beginning acting like Mr. Winter's lawyer. Like, he's completely on his side. For him, there's just no possibility that a man of this rich, of this much money and this much breeding could ever possibly kill anyone. And he operates from that perspective the entire time. And that's how that would go. That's Hitchcock recognizing that in a society built on class and built on money, of course the rich are going to be protected by people like this coroner character.
And
that's the point. That entire point in the remake, it's all gone.
Yeah, doesn't he? I mean, I'm trying to remember if I he bribes him in the remake, right? He doesn't bribe him in the original. It makes
ruins
no sense.
An entire great scene from the original.
Why the hell did she go to the doctor's office in the remake?
Because they needed a Nancy Drew bit. They needed to make this about her and not about him in that moment, which then robs the ending of being so great. Because the ending is suspenseful. Like, you don't know if she's going to survive the fire at Manderley. Like, that's the whole point, is that you don't, like, that moment of suspense when Olivia is looking up at his mansion burning to the ground. And then you have this grand moment of looking up and you're looking around. Where's Joan Fontaine? Where's Joan Fontaine? Your heart's in that moment. And it's not supposed to be, because he's a bad guy and you're not supposed to be on his side. But the movie, it's almost like The Talented Mr. Ripley, in the way that it reverses your own morality. Like, you're still on this guy's side.
Right.
It's so good. It's so good. And then that grand death for Mrs. Danvers in the fire with the house burning down around her in Rebecca's room. It's brilliant. And then what do they do in the remake? They just fuck it up. They just fuck it up.
Yeah. It would have.
You hired Kristen Scott Thomas. Let her have her moment.
Yeah, and she was very good in it. But you're right. They just take the character away from her. If to me, what's lacking in the original is just the fact that it's old. You can't have the. If you were to shoot the story exactly as it is, with these grand, you know, the beautiful house and the scenery, and with today's technology, but keep the story the same, it would have worked. I mean, I would argue this is one of those classics that deserves a remake, a reboot. It works great for what it is, but it's definitely stuck in its time due to the lack of technology.
Exactly. That's a great point, Bob. If you remake this movie, but you do it the right way and actually have him kill his wife, do it the way it was intended, then that would be a great way to remake this movie.
Yeah, and they spend so much time, like they, the original, they really, that beginning where I said, Sean, we were an hour in, and the original is not that way.
No.
They rush the end, but they take their time on the most unimportant part. And I mean, yeah, they need to get to know each other. Part of me appreciates the fact that they gave it the effort and they couldn't make a 3-hour long movie because this wouldn't play for 3 hours.
Right.
But I understand what they were going for. But then you rush the most important. I mean, I didn't even know it was a horror movie, really, or a mystery until, you know, hour and a half into this movie. And Chris Scott Thomas isn't in it till then, or an hour in. And it's really, I don't know, it just, you're like, everything you said is true. It's just clumsy and. The original is so much better. I think the, you know, we say you take money away, they're more creative, but then you, when you put rules on them too, that makes them more creative as well. Like they can't show him murder somebody. Alfred Hitchcock actually makes it better because he had that. To me, I'm glad they did that because I think if you do kill him, it doesn't work the same. It's a harder thing to turn off.
Right.
And so he has him do it inadvertently, and I just love the way. We've had this conversation a million times before with classics where it's just like, why do studios get involved and make them change things that make no sense today? And back then, you have all these logical decisions throughout the entire movie, all these great old movies. Rarely ever do you have this illogical part of the movie where you're just like, well no one would do that. And then today, that's like 90% of the movies you have to, even the ones we like sometimes, you got to just kind of go with it. And this is the perfect example where you can put two side by side, and literally they took out every piece of logic, and just it wasn't fair to the actors, it wasn't fair to the viewers, and sadly, if you go ask any, if you ask any critic or any movie buff or snob, 10 times out of 10 times they're going to take the original. You go to anybody off the street, I'd say 7 times out of 10, they're going to take the Netflix version, and that pisses me off. Just because it's more modern. You know?
That is sad.
I mean, not, and you're not talking your regular moviegoer, just regular person who likes Gerard Butler movies, which is too many of them.
Well, you're in luck, because breaking news from 2 days ago, according to IMDb, Ben Wheatley is doing The Meg 2. So, and it says, quote, because sure, why not?
Why not just say, because, fuck it.
Yeah. Sharks.
Yeah. Yeah, it was, it was weird because I went in, Sean had lowered the bar so much that when I watched, I was like, this isn't nearly as bad as he said. And then when it went back, but there were things that bothered me, but it was going back and it was just like, oh my God, they didn't do anything that bothered me from the original. What the hell's wrong with these people, or specifically Ben Wheatley?
There's a scene in the original that is so amazing, and it's just two women looking out a window, one of them whispering in the other's ear, trying to get the woman. It's this one trying to get Joan Fontaine to kill herself, and the scene lasts for about 3 minutes of her right in her ear, right out this looking, almost able to push her out this window, and just talking to her about how awful her life will be, and how, you know, she's a fraud, and Mr. De Winter now sees that she's a fraud, and why don't you just get it over with? Why don't you just kill yourself? It is a terrifying scene. It is so incredibly well acted. In the remake, it's 30 seconds and it's over and it's meaningless, and it made me so mad.
Yeah.
I wanted to throw something.
Well, yeah, it's that they sped up the second half of that movie, and that's where they needed to take the time, not with her and her original owner or whatever, her original master. they made her, at first I was like, is this the Chris? That's not Kristen Scott Thomas, this horrible lady. I mean, she spent a ton of time with that. I don't know. It boggles my mind how they fucked this up, because it wouldn't have been hard to do right.
Yeah.
All right. Did you watch anything from 1990?
No, unfortunately, I was not able to find the time.
That's good, because we're over an hour anyway. Well, what came out in 1990 was Sibling Rivalry of Kirstie Alley, Soul Taker, Graveyard Shift, the Stephen King story, and Nasty Girl about something about Nazis. Next week, we've got The Craft Legacy, Jacob's Ladder remakes on Netflix, is a movie called Holidate, which if we're really desperate, we'll watch. Our classic is Young Frankenstein. And in 1990, Jacob's Ladder came out. A Roger Corman movie about Frankenstein came out.
That's why we're doing Young Frankenstein, is because Frankenstein Unbound came out 30 years ago. And Frankenstein Unbound is on YouTube. I've already watched half of it, and it's so exciting. So exciting.
Oh, wow.
About it.
I'll have to check that one out. But that is our show. Be sure to go to patreon.com/criticspod, help support the podcast. And if you want some podcast or Everyone's a Critic merch, go to tpublic.com and search Critics Pod, or go to ihatecritics.net and click on the tpublic link up in the right hand corner. Do you guys have a little bit of time for Flickchart?
I do.
All yeah. right.
I don't have anything going on today. This and football.
You want to be in a movie? My brother's filming a socially distanced scene, apparently. So I had to go do in about an hour. The Chronicles of Narnia, Prince Caspian, or Juno?
Juno.
Juno.
Juno. The other guys.
Piece of.
Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, piece of art or a piece of shit?
The other guys, Hollow Man.
Other guys.
The other guys.
Yes. The Time Machine, AI, Artificial Intelligence.
AI.
I'll have to go AI because I think I've seen that.
Do you know the movie Anchors Away, Sean, from 1945?
I'm aware of it. I couldn't tell you what it's about or anything.
All right. How about Sunset Boulevard?
Oh, absolutely.
Or The Revenant?
Ooh. Sunset Boulevard, because it's much more watchable than The Revenant, but they're both brilliant.
I'll go with The Revenant.
And I've only seen The Revenant, so I'll let Sunset win, since you've seen them both. Have you seen Sunset, Zach?
I don't think so.
Okay.
You should see it. It's awesome.
Okay. The Revenant, I want to say I'm begrudgingly picking it. I do enjoy that movie, but I'm angry at it because I don't think that was the one that he should have gotten the award. Just yeah. saying. I think Wolf of Wall Street was 10 times better.
Boo.
I will die on that hill.
I don't care
how many actual animal parts he ate when he filmed that fucking movie. That scene where he did the Quaaludes beats that movie 10 times out of the water, man. Out of the water.
Couldn't disagree more. I hate it. I mean, he was great in it, sure, but the movie was just frustrating. Grindhouse, RoboCop 87.
Ooh, RoboCop.
Death Proof.
Planet Terror. I'm taking Planet Terror over RoboCop 2. I'm sorry.
Going with that hobo with the shotgun trailer.
Mad Max 1979, How to Train Your Dragon.
How to Train Your Dragon.
I'm a huge Mad Max fan, but, you know, How to Train Your Dragon's so much fucking better.
I want to be a Mad Max fan, but other than Fury Road, I just don't like
it. Yeah.
I tried over and over again. I can't like him.
Not under Road Warrior?
No.
I don't get it. I mean, it's just he's hardly in it. And
yeah.
I like the visuals, but there's no story. At least I'm not picking up on the story. And it's just all style over substance, and I just can't get in it.
The secret is growing up smoking weed.
Ace Ventura, Pet Detective, Speed.
Speed.
Oh, Ace Ventura.
I'm going Speed. I love that movie.
It is good.
I like Ace Ventura, too. It's fine.
While You Were Sleeping, Taken.
While You Were Sleeping.
Oh, Taken.
I'm going While You Were Sleeping. Not a big fan of guys I can beat up. being action stars, at least. Keanu Reeves could probably kick my ass, so I'm good. Dave, Jack.
Oh, dear God. What the fuck nonsense? This is like a hell dimension. Dave.
I'm gonna say neither and just go with the FX show Dave. just 10 times better than both those pieces of shit.
Dave movie is a solid dad film. I don't remember Jack at all.
Oh, you're lucky.
Let's see.
Is that the one where he was like a...
He was a little... It was Robin Williams as a little boy.
Yeah, he's just like... He was aging that one...
super fast or something.
Yeah, he was that character from that
Coppola one directed it.
Ugh,
I was wondering that as I'm watching. Has she surpassed his dad yet? I mean, her dad. I mean, I know Godfather 1 and 2 are going to be hard to ever top, but... as a total work of art, you know, all of her works together combined to his, all of his works together, Sophia might be better than Francis.
I'd be willing to say that. I think her work speaks to me a lot more than his does, honestly.
Yeah, I mean,
that could be just generational, though, too.
I mean, that could be. I mean, I know the Godfathers are like epic films. They just don't necessarily speak. They're just really well done.
Mm-hmm.
The Man Who Would Be King. Do you know that one?
Oh, yeah.
Lethal Weapon 2.
The Man Who Would Be King.
I can't vote because I haven't seen The Man Who Would Be King, so I'll let you take it. A Simple Favor, Spider-Man 2002. That's hard for me.
That is hard, actually. But I as much as I like the original Spider-Man, I think A Simple Favor is a better movie. I just watched it again recently and loved it.
I think I agree.
I'm going to surprise you guys, and I'm going to pick Spider-Man.
Spider-Man, I love Sam Raimi. I thought it was great, but...
Oh, I love those movies. If it were
Spider-Man
though.
2, I would have said Spider-Man 2.
Those movies are so... They've aged so poorly, and I love them so much for it. I love them so much. Especially 3. I'm going to throw that in there.
Oh, wow.
3, it's a bad movie. It's a... terrible movie.
Did you hear the news about Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man and Andrew Garfield's Spider-Man?
Yeah, I hope it's true, but...
I hope it's true, too. That's a great idea.
I don't know if it's going to actually happen, though. Like, I feel like it's just, like we're reaching too far. I feel like it's too good to be true. Like, I want to see it, but I have a feeling the only way we're actually going to see it is going to be in the next Spider-Verse movie. I can't see it happening in live action, but I really want it so goddamn bad. Like, I mean, we have Jamie Foxx's Electro, which I know those movies were problematic, but I still like The Amazing Spider-Man. I like those two. The fucking second one was just like fantastic garbage. I loved it. It's just I hope they're doing what they're saying they're doing. I hope that's happening.
So they're making basically a Spider-Verse movie in real life. Is that what the news is?
That's the rumor. Yeah, because there's this whole thing that they're apparently putting together, like the actual, like the Sinister Six movie that they like tease at the end of like Amazing Spider-Man. And it was supposed to have happened by now. And then obviously like they rebooted Spider-Man and it kind of disappeared. And they've confirmed already, 100% have confirmed that Jamie Foxx is showing back up playing the same character from Amazing Spider-Man 2. And the rumor is that they're doing like, they're bringing in like all these different villains from the multiverse, and they're going to form like a team of just like villains from old movies and shit to fight Andrew Garfield, Tobey Maguire, and Tom Holland. I want to see that so bad. Like, I will have to wear rubber pants if I'm watching that in the theater. That is literally every single thing that I want, but I just don't know if I don't want to expect it. Like, if they bring back Dr. Octopus, dude, like, legitimately, I will have to buy bigger pants.